She reduces, reuses, and recycles. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. You are indeed listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. The name of our show today is Save Them All. It is in memory of Pam Hodges, a woman whose loves of her life were her animals and whose mission truly was to protect them all. Joining me for this very special show is Faith Maloney. Faith is the co-founder of Best Friends Animal Society. Best Friends Animal Society is the only national animal welfare organization dedicated exclusively to ending the killing of dogs and cats in America's shelters. She is a consultant in all aspects of the animal care sanctuary in Southern Utah, including the Best Friends Clinic and adoption programs, and she is also helping people from all over the world who are starting sanctuaries themselves. That is not an exaggeration at all. Welcome, Faith, and thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you very much for having me on the program.
I told you when we connected by phone, I almost missed the time for us to start talking because I've been reading and reading and reading, and you just want to go down the rabbit hole of all the history, the spiritual component, what happened way back when. So hopefully I'll be able to stop talking and get you to answer a lot of my questions, because there are many. So I think it's great to start with, what were those days like? It was like a time machine for me, going back in time to the early days of Dogtown. What was going on?
Oh, that was just incredible. I started Dogtown here at the sanctuary. And so I spent many, many days and years strung together, taking care of hundreds of dogs. At one point, I was the unofficial animal control officer for our area and was answerable to four law enforcement.
And it's a beautiful area.
Police.
Sorry.
Oh, it's a beautiful area, but, you know, there's stuff happens everywhere.
Right,
I mean, even in the middle of the desert, you know, they need policemen. So I used to respond to calls from our city police, our county sheriff, and we're on a border town. We're bordered with Arizona. So it was the marshal in our small Arizona town, and also very close by is a Native American reservation. So I was answerable to the tribal police.
So
at any time, one of those agencies would give me a call to pick up a stray dog, or a dog bite, or, you know, all of the kind of things that you get involved with. Granted, it's, as I say, it's in the beautiful landscape of Southern Utah, right, very close to national parks, the Grand Canyon, you know, all of that kind of stuff. But still, people abandon dogs.
So, and still do. You still see them
yes,
in every city and every desert and, you know, all across the country.
Unfortunately, you're right. So, so those early days were exciting, challenging. I lived on site. I lived in a 1971 single-wide trailer.
Oh, my gosh.
Which had seen better days. And for two winters, when I lived there, I had no water because we hadn't buried the pipes deep enough.
Oh, my God.
And so the water froze because we do have four seasons here. So it was very enlightening because you work out how much water you absolutely really need. As long as you've got a friend that's got a shower,
you're
okay for that. Yes, you don't have to think about that. But you think about your cup of tea, you know, seeing as how I'm originally from England.
Right, that's critical.
I needed my cup of tea.
Right.
You know, toothbrush, the toilet, and, of course, primarily the dog water. So, you know, other than that, what else do you need water for?
So those are all the critical pieces you covered.
Those are the basics.
Faith, so many questions come to mind, and I'm going to try to stick to the many, many ones I wrote down, but it was you. How were you feeding them? Like, that's a lot of food to take care of every day to feed the animal population that was growing by leaps and bounds.
It was a lot of food. And I was very, very fortunate in kind of very early days. I mean, when you first start anything, you have to, and you don't have resources. I mean, you don't have contacts, I should say. You should have some resources to buy food. So, of course, in the beginning, we would be buying food from the local grocery or going out to the feed store in St. George and getting food. But early on, I was introduced to how you get donations of food, you know, fairly large amounts of food,
right,
from the companies. And we actually were very lucky to have a Purina distribution center in Flagstaff, which is about a 4-hour drive. And I remember going, they offered us a big donation of food, but they slip sheet load it. Now, you see, I then got very wise about all this kind of loading stuff and trucking. And, you know, it's funny, all the different things you have to learn.
And what does that mean?
And that means that when you pull up, they have a forklift, and it's not on a pallet. It's just on a piece of paper. So the U-Haul, we had a local U-Haul company here in town, but the U-Hauls have a casing over the wheel. You know, they're not flat inside. So, who knew? It's like, who knew these things? So,
I still didn't know until right now.
I know. See how enlightening I am for you. But rider trucks have a flatbed. But the nearest rider truck place to rent them was Page, Arizona. So I had to drive to Page, pick up the rider truck, drive to Flagstaff, which is, you know, a couple hours from there, get it loaded, drive it back to Kanab, get it unloaded, then drive it back to Page. You know, so this is the kind of effort that it took to get. You asked about the food. Sometimes later on it got so that we could get trucks who would actually deliver to Kanab donated foods. That's from Calcan, from Science Diet at one point. So yes, you get very wise about who's going to offer you food in the beginning when you're starting this kind of adventure. And oftentimes, too, stores will give you broken bags or you know, close to date or something. So you get it's like me saying that thing about those passenger trucks. You sort of learn, you have to learn very fast what works. And so, of course, we did all that. But
because every day the hungry dogs are there waiting to be fed.
Always the priority here is and always has been the animals. So they would get food before we did. You know, there was no question about that. If anyone was going to be eating sort of macaroni and cheese, it was us. And the dogs were going to get whatever they needed.
Right, so they were going to get the always, science diet.
They were, you know, they were always the priority. So that's the way we've lived our life here. So,
well, one of the things that I wanted to expand on a little bit, and it comes through clearly in what you're saying, but in my research, I read that you really do have a unique history of how the founders came together, and I thought I would just bring it up because it's a wonderful message. It was a quest for a better world and a commitment to kindness. Can you talk
really
about
was.
That?
We were, those of us who started Best Friends were all children of the 60s. You know, I mean, when I say children, we were young adults in
right.
the 60s.
Right.
And then part of that whole time of questioning, you know, we'd seen I was born right at the end of the Second World War, so grew up with the rationing, especially, of course, being in England, you know, rationing and bomb sites and, you know, very, very much aware of the impact of the war. And then, of course, growing up in the 50s and becoming a young adult in the 60s, I'm not sure I want to do what the traditional path is indicating I would do. And in my particular case, I'd gone to art school, which was, you know, just one of the few things I could actually do was draw and paint. And of course, then my career trajectory would definitely have been in teaching, I'm sure. I don't think that good an artist, so I would have ended up, which is one of my daughter. I have a daughter currently who's a school teacher, and I have huge respect for school teachers, so I wasn't dismissing that.
No, but you had a bigger calling in what you were going to say yes to.
I thought there was something else to do, you know, so that set me on the path of finding out more about how we all tick, you know, what our purpose in life is. You know, it's interesting because I see a lot of that happening now with our young adults that are coming into their late teens, early 20s now. You're seeing a lot of that happen again, which is kind of interesting.
And it's wonderful.
Looking for meaning. And so that was really how a lot of us came together, through friends. I went to art school with, you know, a person who's now still a co-founder here, and then his brother went to architecture school, and you know, it was that kind of way where you connect up with people of like mind
in very tumultuous times. I mean, people were being beaten on the streets, and there was war, and it was. I mean, I remember I was born in 1950, so I remember the late 60s, and it was a painful time. It divided families, and it was. I remember I was working on Wall Street for the summer between college, you know, semesters, and it was awful. I mean, there were the demonstrators and the cops beating them, and it was a very painful time that I think anybody who was alive still remembers. So you all were committed to kindness. That word just so stuck out to me, where that's the better world if you have a commitment to kindness.
Yes, and that for us, that means not just being kind to the animals, you know, because a lot of people come to us and say, boy, I really like animals, but I can't stand people. You know, that was...
That's just not really a good sign.
No, but you hear that quite a lot in the animal world. But we always felt that kindness extended to all of us. And after all, we're animals too. You know, people are animals too. So it was, we always felt that kindness across the board. And kindness... that then extends to children. It extends to what's happening to senior populations. It's just across the board kindness.
It's a way of showing up in the world. I mean, if you're kind, that's it. It impacts every interaction you have. And I thought that was really worth talking about.
Yes, and sometimes you have people when we've been out tabling or out meeting the public. Sometimes people have come up to us and said, "Whoa, why aren't you doing things with people? You know, why are you doing things for animals and not for people?"
And you're kidding me.
No, I'm serious. I had a very, very good friend in Cleveland who said, who was out tabling for her animal organization, and she also was very connected to the community. So this guy comes up to her table and starts ranting at her and saying, "So why are you doing this and why are you not doing this?" And she very excitedly said to him, "Oh, what causes are you involved with here in Cleveland? Because, you know, I'm very involved with this." And she listed off schools and, you know, various concerns. And of course, the man just turned beet red and walked off.
Right. He's just going to criticize
nothing. Kind people who are kind are kind across the board.
I agree.
That's been my experience. They do not say, "Well, I'm going to be kind to dogs and just leave it at that."
Right, but I'm going to kick
everything else.
Yeah.
I'm going to kick cats, or I'm just not going to bother with anything else. People who are kind extend that kindness. It's part of their nature, so they're kind to people who are in distress. They're kind. We are actually, and I often say this to people, we are dealing with people at every step of the way. It's a person who surrenders the animal. It's a person who donates to help pay to take care of that animal.
Right.
And it's a person who adopts the animal. So at no point are you people-less when you work with animals, certainly not in the way that we do it, you know, because we're engaging people the whole time in our cause, because without people, we aren't going to make a difference.
You're not going to make the goals that you have set out to do. I mean, so it's the people factor that has to shift. Another thing that I thought was really noteworthy is that you cared enough about this component of your core values to include it in the history of Best Friends Animal Society, and that is the spiritual side. The philosophy of Best Friends leads to a better life for all. Is that still a core philosophy, and how do you preserve the integrity of that wonderful approach with such tremendous growth? I mean, it's a wonderful core side, and I would say one of the pillars upon which you were founded. So how do you keep that? How do you keep that going?
Well, sometimes being kind, which is, of course, you know, the expression of that philosophical, spiritual viewpoint, does require some discipline.
Right.
You know, it's very easy to get angry. It's very easy to react to someone attacking you with, you know, with negativity, or to feel bad about the whole of society because of what happens to animals. But the thing is, it isn't everybody in society. And I think that's what we've learned to do, is to say, yes, there are people out there that don't care, that are, you know, hurtful, but there's a tremendous amount of people who think the way that we do, who want to step up. We work with a lot of special needs animals, which I know you know from your reading.
And I do want to talk about that in one of the segments. I mean, that's just unbelievable.
But I'll just pop that in at the moment to say that means that we are attracting to the work we do the kind of people who, like us, will take on an injured or damaged animal, you know, mentally or physically.
Right.
So that's the kind of, going back to that spiritual point, if you express that in your life, you know, I'm kind, I'm considerate, even when it's hard. I'm not saying it's easy, and we are not all kind of robotic people out here.
Right, walking around with halos on top, yeah.
No, we've all got opinions, and we're quite strong-willed. And, you know, I always laugh when people say, oh, Faith, can you help with something? I say, yes, I can. So even if I don't know what it is, I say, because I always have an opinion.
Right,
and everybody laughs, you know, because it may not be the right opinion, but I'm quite willing to share it. So that's... but that is, I think, how the spiritual point is expressed, is how we treat people and how we treat animals. And I think that catches on. You asked how you can hold that onto that through growth. And I think, without sounding boastful, I think we, the group of founders that started this, this is what we model in our daily lives and in our behavior.
And then that's, you know, what you attract. Yes.
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 And I think, you know, we're accessible. I just did a workshop. I do several of the workshops here. And one of the ladies came up to me and she said, I just love it that you're here all the time, that you're accessible, that we chat, we have lunch together. You know, she said, in some organizations I know that I've been involved in, she'd been involved with, the higher up, so to speak, were distant. They were up in an office,
right,
and they didn't really...
Inaccessible.
They didn't mix with the people. Whereas that's not the case here at all. We've always held that. We're always there. We're available. We're in the dining room, the lunch room that we have here. First-time visitors can come up and talk to us. You know, there's not that big distance.
There's not a big, huge org chart where everybody's at the top. It's just, it feels so much like a kind team. We're all in this together. You know, you're not going to believe this, but we have 1 minute till the first break, which I can't believe it either. But I wanted to, when we come back, I really want to just have one more question maybe from your history. Like, I want to ask Faith Maloney, how much did you know about dogs those days? I think we should talk about some of the numbers, the big numbers of dogs and cats that are killed in shelters every day. your big mission of how you want to stop that. And then I think we should talk about the workshops that you do. I was very intrigued by those, and I think our listening audience will be. Everybody, please stay here with me. You know there's lots more fun, excitement, and learning for this show. Faith Maloney, co-founder of the Best Friends Animal Society, dedicated solely to ending the killing of dogs and cats in America's shelters. Please stay here with me. Don't go anywhere. Think blue. Think beyond green. Think TDI clean diesel technology. One part of the Volkswagen Think Blue initiative, our goal of creating and encouraging eco-conscious products and behaviors. This is Mrs. Green. A car that can drive a long way should still make you want to, well, drive a long way. Volkswagen Jetta's TDI clean diesel is a high-mileage vehicle that lets you stop at the filling station less often so you can spend more time enjoying the road. See Chapman VW today for a very special offer on the 2014 Jetta TDI.
Find everything you need for your next adventure at Bookman Sports Exchange. Buy it new, buy it used, or trade up and go where you've never been before. Explore this big backyard we call Tucson. Bookman Sports Exchange has the gear you need for anything from a quick day hike in Sabino to a long backpacking trip through the Grand Canyon. Bookman Sports Exchange, open daily, located on Speedway, east of Country Club. For details and more information, visit bookmansports.com.
Ready to clean out that garage? Goodwill offers you 40 convenient locations all over southern Arizona. And at every one, you'll be greeted by a uniformed Goodwill employee trained to assist you in unloading your items, prepared to offer you a receipt for your tax-deductible donation, and grateful for something you won't get anywhere else.
Thank you. Because of your donation, I have a job.
The gift of Goodwill. For a list of Goodwill donation sites, go to goodwillsouthernaz.org.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And we're certainly giving you some wonderful things to think about today. Two quick reminders. Mrs. Green's World membership program is alive and growing. Please consider becoming an official supporter of Mrs. Green's World if you haven't already. It will help keep our broadcasts free and independent, and we can continue to bring great shows like this to you. It's easy to become a member. Visit our website at Mrs. Green's World. And click on the Preserve Our Planet icon in the upper right-hand corner. And I really do hope you'll do just that. Another quick reminder is that we have a great app to listening for our podcast. It's called Igloo Radio. And again, it's on our homepage. It's free. So you can take shows like this and put them on your smart device and take a walk and hear all about what Faith Maloney is doing to save the pets. So our guest is Faith Maloney. She is the co-founder of Best Friends Animal Society. Best Friends Animal Society is the only national animal welfare organization dedicated exclusively to ending the killing of dogs and cats in America's shelters. That is a big yes you have stepped up to. I will tell you that way back in the 60s. You're like, what am I getting myself into? So one, yes, really, and how it's grown. So one quick question is, what did you know about dogs back in the day? Were you an animal lover from the get-go, and so you knew maybe what you were getting into, or was this a surprise path?
It was really a surprise path. I had pets growing up. My mother was the big animal lover in our family, but I had kids. I had a family. You know, I was kind of focused on raising kids. So I wasn't really so focused on animals until a little later in life when, because of my understanding of how the whole concept of animals. So I came at it, I think, a little more from the position of what was happening to animals, which then went into actually daily working with animals. Like, as I said, I started Dogtown here. And I love that question because I had no credentials whatsoever. I really had no business. I had no business doing this. But I often think that my background, which was in, as I said, in art, you know, the creative world.
Right.
Had given me the ability to observe. And I think this is how I learned what I learned. I I watched dogs. I didn't do it from the book and then apply.
Right.
I did it from the animal itself. And this was what was so amazing and exciting for me. I worked out that I fed and took care of dogs 7 days a week because we had no, you know, there wasn't anybody to do 2 days while you did five, you know, 7 days a week for 11 years straight. I fed and took care of hundreds of dogs. Now, that was university for me because, you know,
that
every
was getting your
is,
PhD and
I got my,
another
yes.
PhD and another PhD.
That's right.
Right,
I went
on
from,
the ground.
I had to go from the whole lot. I had to get my bachelor's, master's, and then and then putting on the PhDs, which I'll have to amusingly tell you, I did give a PhD to a gentleman who used to come and volunteer with us, and I'm still in touch with him. He's an older gentleman now. And so I handed him a PhD, which stood for poop handler's degree. And he actually had one of those real ones.
Oh,
you know, he was a professor
God.
at a local university and in music. So he had an actual PhD. So, but he called me recently and he said my PhD, the one I gave him, holds prominence in his office. He doesn't even know where the other PhD.
That is such a hashtag. Hashtag poops handler's degree.
Poop handler's degree.
Seriously.
I know. So, so yes, but that was, I'm kind of happy I arrived at the knowledge I have that way, you know, by watching dogs, by watching them, how they behave, how they interact with others, how they interact with people. And so, and I have to confess, I subsequently have read some books on it, but I didn't, that wasn't where I started.
You could write some books on it. That's
well,
the really important
know, people
thing.
People sometimes say that, you know, because the stories, I have a lot of stories jammed into my 30 years here at the sanctuary here in Utah. You know, I have a lot of dog stories in there. And so sometimes if something prompts a story to come out, you know, it'll come out.
At some point, you're just going to have to write a lot of them down because it's really important. I mean, it is preserving what happened in the time machine. So I hope you do.
Exactly.
Writing a book is hard, but it's when you have all that you have to do. But it's preserving the history. It is unique. When I read the story, I was just captivated. So can we shift to today for a minute and focus on what things look like in the country today in terms of dogs and cats in animal shelters and in the U.S. and how go ahead.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, how does it look now? And I'm going to say something that you're going to find a little shocking when I say it's better than it was. And you might
love
say,
that.
What does that mean? And when we first heard this, when we started getting together, because we were forming, as you said, from the 60s onwards, but we came together to start working on the animal issue towards the kind of latter part of the 70s, so 1970s. We had clubbed together and we had a ranch in Arizona. It was a very nice ranch, and we started taking animals from the Yavapai Humane Society, which is the Prescott Humane Society. At that time, the number of animals being killed in our shelter system was around 17 million. That's 1-7, 17 million. Now, you hear that figure, and you just, fall over.
It's staggering.
It's staggering. And then you think, you know, your current brain is saying, is that true? That sounds a bit suspicious.
What?
But then I thought about it. For those of us who were alive back then, in the late 70s, there were no programs. There were no spay and neuter programs on every corner.
Right.
There were no super adoptions. There was very little breed rescue, which, of course, is hugely active now. And there were some. I'm not saying there was none. There were just, if an animal entered the shelter back then, unless it was reclaimed by the owner, it was very rare for that animal to leave alive. There was a lot of sickness. The facilities back then, and I'm afraid to say some still exist today, some of those old buildings,
right,
where there was no quarantine area. So if an animal came in with a viral disease, like
every
dog,
one of them
it would
got
be,
it.
Yeah, you know, for dogs, it was canine distemper or parvo.
Right.
For cats, it was feline distemper, panleukopenia, you know, feline leukemia. The cats we were adopting from the Yavapai Humane Society back then in the 70s all had feline leukemia.
Oh, my gosh.
Which is a very, very virulent virus and a killer. You know, you did not survive it. So that kind of explained those numbers, you know, when you kind of look back, because today we're still looking at an appalling number, and that number is in the range of 4 million.
But it's unbelievable to think of the, that's a big, huge reduction, and yet still a very large number. I mean, if
you've got it. And
it's both.
That's why I said it's better now, but you're not going to believe me. But if you make that comparison to when there was nothing happening, to today when there's a lot happening, but we still have a mountain to climb. Because that 4 million registers as about 9,000 animals a day.
And in that number, is that just for that 9,000 number, is that just dogs and cats? Because I'm sure there's other animals, or is that all
cats? I'm not totally sure how it breaks down. The highest number of animals killed are dogs and cats.
Right.
The highest number of animals killed are cats. 70% on average, and it varies, you know, from place to place, 70% of animals killed in our shelters are cats. So they take up a huge part of that number. I'm sure, though, rabbits, for example, are the third highest killed in our shelter system, but it's still a smaller proportion compared to dogs and cats. So I feel that 9,000 is pretty reflective of predominantly dogs and cats.
And, you know, I don't usually ask what I call cranky questions, or this might not be kind on my part, but seriously, people who are bringing you bunnies, are they bunnies that someone thought it was cute to put them in a basket and give them to somebody for Easter? And then the whole thing about pigs that started, it was so fun to have a potbelly pig, and then people had them. I mean, maybe it's not unkind on my part, but shouldn't people think before they purchase a pet or purchase a pet to give for a gift? I don't want anybody to give me a pet for a present. I want to pick my own pet.
See, I love your tagline here on your station. We just want people to think.
Right. We don't tell you what to think. You know, we just want you to think about it, people.
I absolutely love it. And the reason I love it is because of what you just said, which is people don't think. It's kind of like where does Easter Bunny, I mean, you know, and I'm sure you've read and I've read up, you know, where all that tradition comes from. It usually comes from some pagan tradition, worshiping the goddess Estra, you know, all of this kind of thing.
Right.
And somehow or another, because it's baby bunnies and chicks, you know,
chicks.
Little baby chickens are the ones that we see them in feed stores, you know, places where people go, you'll see big pens of baby bunnies and baby chicks around Easter time.
And every kid melts and wants one. Every single child goes, oh my God, they're so
cute. There's nothing more adorable than a baby bunny. But the thing is that once that baby, bunnies are not easy keepers. We do take care of bunnies here. Our mission, as you said, is predominantly to end the killing of dogs and cats. But here at the sanctuary, we take care of bunnies and parrots and horses and farm animals. You know, we have other animals that come into our realm, so we're very, very much aware of the bunny issue. And usually a couple of month or so after the Easter rush, when the baby bunnies have been acquired, and the chicks, don't forget the chicks, then the calls start coming to all animal agencies out there. Okay, well, we've got this bunny. Or what happened in our local area a family decided that they would raise bunnies for meat because they are raised for meat. And then they couldn't handle that. So rather than, you know, making sure the animals were fixed, they said, oh, well, we'll just let them go.
Oh, my God.
And the next thing...
I'm sorry. That doesn't usually come out on air for me. Oh, my goodness.
And this, is back to your don't people think, because, of course, at rabbits, and we've been involved in many rabbit rescues here at the sanctuary, the little phrase comes up, yes, they breed like rabbits. Rabbits are some of the fastest breeders out there because they are part of the food chain for the wildlife out there. And we're talking about domestic bunnies now, not wild bunnies, but bunnies still, you know, whether they're domestic or wild, they still breed very fast. So this family, who started off with two, when we got the call, had over 30 bunnies around their backyard area. So we went in and we did with their consent, and they were kind people because they really, they just didn't think. And so we did a TNR, which is the term we use for trap, neuter, return. We use it mostly for community cats, but we've used it for community bunnies as well, where we go in and we basically stop the reproduction cycle. And we took a lot of the babies, and we were able, like we do with kittens, out of that program, and we're able to tame them and make them available for adoption as pets. But yes, the not thinking is the, you know, I love the teacup pig one. You brought that one up. You know, that was a big fad, and people, film stars and Paris Hilton and people like that were getting these teacup pigs.
And I just want to say, like, give me a break. I mean, I don't want to sound like Debbie Downer, but really, do you want a pet pig?
Well, the thing about you, we were saying there's nothing more adorable than a baby bunny. Follow that with there's nothing more adorable than a baby piglet.
It's true.
Than a piglet, which is a baby pig.
It's absolutely true.
Pigs are absolutely precious. Now, what people don't know, because they didn't Google it, you know, but there's no excuse these days.
Not anymore. Right. You couldn't do that when you started, but now you can just Google it.
No, now you can Google it. So what pigs take up to 4 years to reach their maturity.
Oh, my gosh.
So, but pigs can reproduce. Your audience is getting a lot of the birds and bees at this in this moment. But male pigs can reproduce at, like, 2 months. I'm not kidding you. So when these families come in, and we got a contract recently, someone surrendered their pig to us, and they gave us the contract that the breeder had given them, and we saw that they'd paid $5,000 for this piglet.
Oh, my goodness.
And, you know, with instructions on what to feed the pig, and the primary instruction was they should feed the pig oatmeal. Now, I think you and I would immediately Google that. Is feeding oatmeal the correct diet? You know, I could even put that question in right now for a pig, and the sites would come up to say, no, they need to eat this, that, and the other. So these people spend $5,000.
To get duped.
And even if they're shown the parents have reproduced as babies.
Babies make babies.
So... okay, so this pig, by the time it reaches its full maturity after 4 years, is now 250 pounds, which is not unusual. We actually have one here that was purchased as a teacup pig that is in that size range.
Oh, my God.
It's not to say that they haven't, through breeding runts to runts, much as, of course, what happened in dogs and other animal breeding, they've managed to make a smaller pig. They have. We fully acknowledge that some of those pigs might not exceed 40 pounds, but where a full-sized pot-bellied pig in the 100 to 200-pound range has a lifespan of 19 to 20 years, and we've seen that here, some of these ones that they've forced into making smaller have about a 9 to 10 year lifespan.
So
they've
just
cut the lifespan
by $5,000. I'm still stuck on that.
$5,000.
They could have given it to your organization, and it would have gone a long way, baby. It's like, come
on.
Well,
you got it. But you hit the nail on the head when you said people don't think. Mm. Now, it's absolutely true. And
hold that thought.
We're all guilty.
Hold that thought. We have to have another break. And I'm sure there's not a listener that will go anywhere. Everyone stay with me. Faith Maloney from Best Friends Animal Society. Lots more surprises to come. I don't know how we're ever going to end this show. We'll be right back.
Join us for a new Mrs. Green's World episode every Saturday at 12 noon Arizona time at MrsGreensWorld.com. All of our past shows are available as on-demand podcasts at MrsGreensWorld.com. Listen on your computer or mobile device. Connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram. Mrs. Green's World is a proud member of the Dream Vision 7 and Glimmerglass Radio Networks. If you have questions about the show, write to us at info@MrsGreensWorld.com. We'd love to hear from you. More Mrs. Green's World, next.
Hi there, this is Mrs. Green with some pretty impressive news about the VW Jetta TDI. It's got a turbocharged clean diesel engine. It's 90% cleaner than previous diesel engines. It gets 609 miles on one tank of gas, more than the Prius. That's from Tucson, Arizona to San Diego and halfway back. And it's got an amazing 6-speed Tiptronic transmission. See Chapman VW today for a very special offer on the 2014 Jetta TDI or visit ChapmanTucson.com.
You already know the Habit Store has cabinets, appliances, and paint, but did you know that we have contemporary and vintage furnishings? You might find a gorgeous new sofa offered at 50% off retail price or an antique mahogany dresser priced to sell. You might also find some great weekly specials on the Red Tag Sale. Keep up with the bargains through Facebook, Twitter, and our monthly newsletter. The Habit Store hours are Monday through Friday 9 to 5, Saturdays 8 to 4, and you'll find us on Grant Road just off I-10 in Tucson, Arizona.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And not only is our wonderful guest today, Beth Maloney, who is the co-founder of the Best Friends Animal Society, giving us a lot to think about, we're having a lot of fun. And I think that's really important on the Mrs. Green's World journey, because it's just, I was looking at some of my notes, and I've got a lot of things that I can do with the social media. Like, was it Poops Handler's degree? Is that what you said?
Poop Handler's degree is a PhD.
Is a PhD, yep. And then TNR is Trap, Neuter, and Return.
Return, yeah. That's what we do with our community cats. Because as I said, with the number that are being killed, a large, way too large percentage of that number are cats.
And while we're on break, I just have to tell you this. While we're on break, I have my computer next to me always in case I run out of questions, which is not going to be a problem on the show because you're going to have to come back. But I Googled what you said about, you know, should I feed my pigs oatmeal? And the first thing that came up, Faith, is my pig just gave birth to 11 piglets in the middle of the night. It shakes every few minutes. Am I doing the right thing? Seriously, I thought not only are they giving birth, there were 11 piglets born, so they're very fertile.
They have huge litters.
I'm having too much fun on my own show. So
and I just want to, you know, coming back on, because I'm with you on this whole thing, and we go, you know, we started this by saying, why don't people think?
Right.
And I think one of the, again, coming back to kindness, we often do find these are not the people who get involved with some of these things. Like even the question that you just read that someone said, am I doing the right thing? People don't really, they don't think of this in any harmful way. And it's partly we're all so susceptible to, media manipulation, all kinds of things. And so when people see these celebrities with pot-bellied pigs, you know, they go, oh, well, if Paris Hilton has one or Rupert Grinch, you know, the one from Harry Potter
right,
films.
Right.
He got one too. And the kids read that, or young people read that, and they go, oh, they look cute. Aren't they cute? You know, we all are susceptible to being manipulated.
And it's a very emotional decision. I mean,
yes.
it's I do work with the Humane Society of Southern Arizona and build partnerships for them with some of my other sponsors to have, I call it Pick a Pooch Day. So they bring cats and dogs to some of the big car dealerships here, and you can see it going on. And one of the things I like about the Humane Society is there is a vetting process. They don't just say, oh, that's great, you love this dog, take it. They, you know, I've been so impressed with how they make the, they have an animal history and says, you know, not good with children under 14 or used to having quiet or reacts to loud noises. So they educate the parents and the kids yeah. to think about, this is a big decision. You're taking charge of someone else's life, literally.
And so, this is why it is so recommended that people adopt rather than purchase. Because when the in the purchase arrangement, if you just have your money and you go down to the pet store, or even you see an ad on Craigslist or in the newspaper, all that person is interested in is the exchange. I will hand you this puppy. You will hand me $500. And that's it. Whereas if you adopt from a reputable agency, the Humane Society you mentioned, and then all the other wonderful people across the country who do adoptions, they're going to be looking at the match. And they're going to be guaranteeing their adoption. They're going to say, like we do, look, if it doesn't work out, and it sometimes doesn't for all kinds of reasons, then, you know, we will take the animal back. We, you know, we're not leaving you in the lurch, so to speak. And this is our arrangement with our adopters also, because we are looking to help you have a wonderful experience with that new family member.
And
when you just slap
people,
down the
yeah,
money
right.
and then you take something, and particularly what we found, and this is one of our campaigns, is against puppy mills. Is that most pet stores, and again, can't generalize, but a lot of the pet stores, they're obtaining their merchandise, so to speak, through the puppy mill syndicates.
Right.
And these are people who farm dogs the same way as other animals are farmed, you know, for meat or the table. They're farming dogs. And so they have very little investment in finding that animal the right home. It's a business exchange. It's a product, and money passes hands. So we've taken that on as one of our campaigns, and we have we do a lot to educate the consumer. You know, it's kind of hard to stop puppy mills. It's within the law. You know, you may object to it, but they're following the law of the business world. So, you know, to go up and stamp your tiny feet outside of those places and say, you should close down, I'm horrified, doesn't do much
because
they are working within the law.
Right.
So what we've been doing for years now is we do very quiet and civilized campaigns outside of commercial pet stores that we know are sourcing their puppies and kittens from the mills. And we will stand there as a way to educate the consuming public. So we have successfully managed to close down several stores who were operating purely as outlets for the mills. If those stores agreed to change their model to being like Petco and PetSmart do,
right.
to be able to be open to animal rescue groups to place animals from rescue, then great. You know, nobody wants to stop a business. But if the business is entirely based on this horrendous puppy mill business, you know, selling these the products, who are often not well.
Right.
I mean, this is really
right.
when you do go online and you start reading about people who purchased a puppy at a pet store, and then they're in for thousands of dollars of vet bills.
And the
because
ahead,
they were
sorry.
Bred under appalling circumstances.
Yeah. You're right. A mill. It's just that's just
it's a living, breathing.
Yeah, it's really awful. And, you know, one of the things that you're discussing this brings up to me in my experience with doing these pick a pooch days. What a way to vet what animal is best for you. And I see stories, and I go, and of course, every time I go, I cry. So you'll see the dog with three legs that someone will come in, an elderly couple, you know, he or she may have a cane. And this is a true story. And they are like magnets to each other to get the right pet. And if everybody gets a puppy, You don't always know what you're getting. It might, you know, come and crawl up on your lap, and I have nothing against puppies. But when you adopt a pet, you really do have an opportunity to think about your personality. What's the personality of the dog? What are you looking for? And there's just a win-win-win. But let's talk about your big, huge yes, which is to literally end the killing of animals in shelters. And you have a date. Go ahead.
Yeah, there are various dates around. I mean, was there a particular date that you were referring to?
I think what I read that you want to do is stop it by, did I read somewhere or did I make this up? Because there was a lot of facts, like by 2019, which is not, what is that date?
That was, I know we have various different goals, like for LA, I believe it's 2017.
Okay.
That they're working towards a no-kill LA. And 19, I believe, was the state of Utah. So we have various different goal dates.
I found my notes.
Okay. So NKLA, which is no-kill LA, it's a program we started several years ago now to work with the city of Los Angeles to bring about a time where it's a no-kill city. Just to clarify for your audience, no kill does not, in its definition, does not mean never kill, meaning that there are animals that come in sick or are so dangerous that it would be just unsafe to adopt that animal out. So there is a classification where, and it has to be, you know, in our terms, it isn't casual. It isn't like, oh, that dog coughed, you know, now we'll kill it.
There's protocols.
You know, it's, for us, it's over a 90% save rate is the expression used, meaning that 90% of the animals that come through that facility, leave alive, you know, to adoptive homes. So those dates are there as goals, and we are doing very well.
It's unbelievable.
In respect to those
really
goals.
It blows my mind.
One of the big programs, and we have that even going in your community, working with the Pima folks down there, is our the big TNR programs, where we're partnered with PetSmart Charities to help with the TNR. We mentioned that term earlier, trap, neuter, return, with the cats. And the what we're doing is working with cities, and Tucson being one of them, to stop the animals before they enter the shelter system and that are therefore, you know, counted in that shelter system. Once, and we're working with the city authorities on this, that once the cats are identified as out there in the community, a trailer park, you know, behind a restaurant, wherever they are congregating, we have teams of people that go out there with the traps. We trap them, we get them to a centralized spay-neuter clinic, get them fixed, and then we identify them by taking a little slice off the left ear. That's so we can tell if they get in a trap again that they've been fixed. It's an identifier. Then they get returned back to that area where people are feeding them. Because the thing about it is there are, I think again I heard the same figure, 17 million estimate of people feeding community cats out there throughout the country, often doing it secretively, but they're putting out food for kitties they see in their area. So we know the kitties are being taken care of.
Right.
in those communities, and they're being monitored so that if new cats, when new cats come into the system, we can tell because of that ear tipping process I mentioned. So this is huge in terms of the numbers of animals entering our shelter system.
Right, the control piece.
Another byproduct, which we kind of fairly recently tuned in on, is how many of those killed, of those 70% killed I mentioned earlier, are kittens under the age of 8 weeks.
Oh,
now,
gosh.
Again, you go, what? Who knew? Yes, if a cat or if a kitten comes in that is deemed to be, by some guesswork, I suppose, under the age of 8 weeks, it is automatically euthanized because it takes time to hand raise and bottle feed and all of that. But
right.
I said to a colleague of mine, I said, what about 7 weeks? And they went, no, 7 weeks. If they know it's 7 weeks, that kitten will be killed. So what we have started are kitten nurseries.
Oh.
I love this. I love this. Because, you know, most groups out there have foster programs
right.
for baby kittens, you know, and I can assure you, having done it myself, oftentimes you don't get a lot of repeat business. There aren't that many people who like getting up at 2 a.m. and feeding every 2 hours. You know, so after a while that starts to get old and you've used up all your wonderful foster homes who say, oh, not this time.
I want to sleep this week.
Right. Oh, yeah, I want to sleep this week. So what we've established, and we do it in L.A., we do it in Salt Lake, we do it here, we do it all over the place, is have a centralized location with people on shift work.
Oh, my gosh.
So we have some people that love, they are up all night. They do not sleep. They sleep during the day
right.
for one reason or another.
Right.
So the 2 o'clock shift is not a hardship. So they come on in and they do their 2 o'clock shift and they feed the babies and until they get to be seven to 8 weeks, where they are then, and we do stay early, you know, because we do not
right.
want to send anything out that can reproduce.
Right.
So they get fixed.
Prevention.
And they get put in. Yeah, they get put into the adoption system wherever they are, wherever these programs are. But this is taking a huge slice out of the number of animals being killed.
Kitten nurseries.
So one of the things that we've been able to do is through statistics and through clever people, and I don't count myself as one of those, who count the numbers and they say, This is where we target our energies. This is where we target our resources. And it is being reflected in seeing the numbers dropping in the cities we've been involved with using this TNR program with the cats. But also, of course, we work with pit bulls. We work with, that's the other slice that gets, you know, some bad luck if a dog enters the shelter system and is identified as a pit bull or even a dog that looks like a pit bull. And so that's another area we do a lot of work in, too.
And boy, do
the
animal
care
people really stick up for them and say, this dog has the best personality, this dog is such a sweetie.
Yes.
And I, well, for
all
one...
All dogs are individuals,
yes,
yeah.
Yes, and I, for one, when I see them at a street fair, it makes me a little scared. I react. I've gotten better because of what I've learned doing this. And I want to just briefly mention to you, I don't know if the good news got to you, but one of the most wonderful things that happened in our election is that Proposition 415 passed to expand. It was a $22 million bond for the Pima County Animal Shelter to renovate and improve it. So that was really good news the day after the election. And, you know, you're not going to believe this, and I mean it. If you will come back for another show down the road, I'm halfway through the questions I wanted to ask you, and we have 1 minute left. So I want to tell everybody. I know, it's not even funny, but you can find out about Best Friends by going to bestfriends.org. Their Facebook page is Best Friends Animal Society. It has thousands and thousands of followers. You know, they put something up, 2,700 people like it. And on Twitter, it's at Twitter at Best Friends. And I encourage you to do that. You can donate at their website. And Faith Maloney, thank you for showing up in my life. This was a great show. And thank you for all of the good work that you're doing for truly man's best friend. It was just my pleasure.
My pleasure also. Thank you, and I'd love to come back.
I'm going to call Kelly after I get off the show. Make it a great green week, everybody. We have great shows coming up. Check out my website. I ran out of time.